Right, you're good to go.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, hello everybody and welcome to the Talk to Danielle podcast. I am your host, Danielle C. Baker. And before we get started, be sure to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening or watching from. And we are, when this episode is going to air, we'll be in season four. I can't believe we're already in season four. So I do invite you to have a look at the three previous seasons. There may be some episodes there that may resonate with your reality today. You have great guests on different topics that has to do with your parenting. So have a look at that. We're going to start right away with our guest today, with Christina P. Simmons. I'm so excited to have her on. Thank you so much, Christina, for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. This is so exciting. And I love the way we met too. It was like a random LinkedIn message. So
I'm enjoying my experience on LinkedIn because that's pretty much all of the connections that I've had on that platform. It's just these random, just stumble upon somebody and it just clicks. So great. So I'm really happy, and I've been I love this. No pun intended, but your book, Eat Your Feelings. I've been eating this book. It's just wonderful. It speaks to me so much. But before we get started on your work, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to where we are today?
sure. So I think the reason that we connected is because we both have worked with children in the past. And so by trade or by my schooling, I'm a pediatric occupational therapist. But what I learned the most, or who taught me the most, is my son, who was diagnosed on the autism spectrum at the age of 4. And so he's the one who set me down the path of occupational therapy and wanting to get my master's in that. And it was really as a mom, not really. I mean, I saw it as a new career path, but it was really as me as a mom. I needed to know how his little brain worked and why he was so angry and what I could do to help him. And I couldn't find help in our area. We live kind of rurally, and I was gonna have to drive like an hour any direction that I went. And I also had, he had two older sisters, so they were still young at the time. And so I said, you know what? I'm just gonna do this myself. And so here we are, all those years later, and he's doing fantastic. I don't regret a minute of it. And although it's been challenging, I think that I just love all the lessons that he has taught me. So that's how we got here.
I find it so interesting. The more I speak to people and the more I interview people, is in that case of a neurodivergent child, a lot of the times parents will pivot and change their vocation, I guess we could say, because of the fact. And I think this is where it's so important to have these conversations first, for parents to feel like they are normal, even though they don't feel normal, that they're not alone. That they're struggling, or even to find the resources that they need, or to have access to the resources. So you kind of have to get creative and take matters into your own hands. So for the parents who are listening or watching, just know that you are not alone going through this, and there is a community out there that can help you. So it is rewarding when you start working and seeing the changes in your child, and the connection that you're creating with your child as well. I think it's beautiful. You do a lot of work. This is what I really like, because in your book you do talk, obviously, I'm one that eats my emotions and I eat my stress. So and I'll redirect people to read more about your story, to have a look at your book. But you work a lot with the nervous system and how to regulate ourselves so that we are able to work through our challenges or whatever that may look like. Can you talk a little bit on that and the work that you
Yeah.
do with that?
So, yeah, what I realized when my son, when we were like in the deepest trenches of his diagnosis, and even before we had the diagnosis, since we didn't know what was going on, my girls, I have twin girls that are older than he is, but they were perfect. You know what I mean? And like I was just starting to notice these differences of the way that he played or didn't play and how he reacted to other people. And then when he started having like the big meltdowns, and we couldn't soothe him, we couldn't comfort him. And I started to realize that my nervous system was very dysregulated. And when you have two dysregulated nervous systems coming together, it's a bomb. I mean, so and that's really what I learned was my emotional state and my nervous system regulation deeply affected him. And that was another thing that I learned when I was working in the clinic and even in the school system. If mom came into the clinic frazzled and talking 90 miles an hour, and this had happened and that had happened and dad's not helping and blah blah blah. The child was just, the session was no good because mom is throwing off all of this negative energy. And I would try to explain to the parents, I said, you are their person, whether they're adopted, biological, foster, whatever they are, they are now tethered to you. They are bonded to you. And so they feel every emotion that comes from you. They feel, even without words, they know exactly what you're saying. Because I mean, especially the kids that have been inside the womb, they've been inside your body. Like they know you better than anybody else in this world. And so I just really tried to get that across to my parents that you've got to find a way to find your center and your calm, because that's going to keep the whole household calm. And so that's when I realized that I had a problem. And so I started working on my nervous system regulation, and some of the things that helped him also helped me. So that was really interesting, kind of going through that process.
And you're sorry, and that's so hard to admit when you realize that, oh, I may be part of the issue. I may be triggering my own child. You're so in it too that it's hard to just can you give us some examples maybe of our little quick exercises that you've seen that work that parents could start incorporating into their daily routine?
So he loves deep pressure. And so I used to make him, we used to call it a Judson burrito. I used to roll him up in a yoga mat. And
Oh, I love that.
it made him so happy. Like it was the smallest thing, and we would turn it into a game. But that deep pressure, and just, like he had like a big beanbag chair. And so I would take either like another pillow or maybe a yoga ball or something, and like mush, just mush and squish kind of, gently. But that pressure, and it sort of resets their nervous system, because kids, neurodivergent kids or adults, whoever you are, because they grow up into neurodivergent adults when they're kids, their nervous systems are, they just don't work the same. And so sometimes they don't even have body awareness. Like that's why a lot of these kids seem so clumsy. They don't know where their limbs are in space. So, and then, they're falling down a lot, or they're running into walls, or they're, that kind of thing. But also, I mean, my son would like run just full speed into a wall and think it was the most hilarious thing ever. Because he doesn't enjoy like light touch. That's why kids, they have so much trouble getting their hair cut. It's like that light, that light kind of touch. He loved to be submerged in water, but he hated the feeling of water trickling down his back or down his face, or he had to wipe it off. And so just really the biggest thing that I learned was to observe. I always used to tell the parents and the people of the schools, you need to listen with your eyes, because you'll be able to tell what helps them and what doesn't. And a lot of it's trial and error. Some kid, like I said, he used to love for me to wrap him up like that, like a burrito, or to push on him, or give him big squeezes or hugs, that kind of thing. But some kids, that bothers them. So, I mean, it's a lot of trial and error. And if once they're to that really elevated state, sometimes nothing helps. And I think that's another thing that I had to learn as a parent, was to not feel bad if I couldn't comfort him. Because I, for the longest time, my husband and I thought we were the worst parents ever. Like we're doing a horrible job. And it's just because we didn't know. I mean, and like I said, and I was so dysregulated, and my husband didn't have any understanding. I was going back to school and trying to learn and all that kind of stuff. And he's a little bit old school, and he's so much better with him now. But he was from the old school of, I'm dad. When I give him instructions, he follows. And that was not happening in our household. So it was just a lot of, I had to tell my husband, I said, you need to be calm if you're going to enter his space. And that's been the biggest game changer, just us being calm, and so that he doesn't feel threatened when we come into his space.
Well, that's the thing, because they really do, and that's what I've experienced as well in terms of challenges, is that old school, will just discipline with more discipline when it's the discipline that is causing the meltdowns. So it's to change that, and that the fact that you're not a bad parent, the fact that you care and that you're worried that you may be, proves
Right.
that you are not a bad parent. So just keep that in mind as well. Do you have any tricks for the parents to help themselves calm down? Sometimes you're in it and you can't seem to be able to get out of it. Would you be able to kind of share some wisdom for us on that one?
Yeah, and so this the most simple thing, and I know a lot of people talk about breath, but that really is what helped me the most. I do box breathing a lot. So that's just, breathe in for four, hold for four, breathe out for four, hold for four. And there's a lot of different variations of all the breathing that you can do, but just that you're concentrating on your breath. But also, I mean, sometimes I had to leave the room. I mean, like if I knew I was getting, if I was getting escalated, then that wasn't helping the situation. And so I would just leave him in his room. I mean, obviously make sure he was safe on something soft or whatever it was, but leave him in his room, close the door, and I would just have to walk away. And I felt guilty about that for a lot of years, but I just realized that walking away did way less damage than me staying there and yelling at him, or you know what I mean? Because sometimes my emotions would sort of get away from me, and I wouldn't even realize what I was saying or how loud I was getting. Because once I got dysregulated, then it was, all caution went out the window. I mean, nobody knew what they were doing. He didn't know what he was doing. I didn't know what I was doing. And a lot of times he wouldn't remember acting that way. You know what I mean? So that's another thing. Like, it's not their fault. Their safety system takes over, and sends them into fight or flight, and then their body is just on autopilot. And so that was another thing that I had to get across to my husband. I'm like, he's not doing this on purpose. And I think that's why I became obsessed with the vagus nerve, because I realized that the vagus nerve is why they do a lot of the things that these kids do.
You're so right. And there's so much I could unpack there. You've hit so many different things, but you're right. The breath, once you start noticing your breath, you can actually catch yourself before you get to that. But it takes time to, and again, trial and error to see what works. So I think it's, you also mentioned, because you said, just some, you don't even realize what you're saying anymore, and you're all like escalated. But you often talk about saying more with less words. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, so I realized, and this was more in the school system setting when I realized this, but I realized that when I went into a session with one of my kiddos, especially if they were pre-K, I was in the elementary schools. Most of the time, actually, I was inside the classroom. And so there was so much going on in there already. All the other kids are doing, what they're doing. And, they would have, may have a group of kids over here that were on the spectrum, and then the group of kids over here that were typical. And so they were doing one thing, and they had centers, and, it was just chaos. And so me adding words to that environment, the kids were shutting down. I mean, you could see it. You know what I mean? You could see it in their body language. You could see it in their eyes. You could see it, and they would tense up. It was the whole thing. So my best sessions were when I just remained calm and I would just model whatever skill it was that I wanted them to do. And it might be something as simple as showing me a letter on the iPad. You know what I mean? Because a lot of these kids were non-speaking, and so we weren't sure what they knew. We didn't know if they knew the alphabet. We didn't know if they knew their colors. Like, you know what I mean? You can't just ask them like another kid. But I would just model whatever it was that I wanted them to do, no instructions. And those were the best sessions that I would have when I literally used no words. Maybe a touch, like to bring their attention or their awareness back to what I was doing. But yeah, I think a lot of times we can say so many things without ever using any words at all. And it's a deeper connection. Because a lot of times we get distracted by all the noise and the words in the world. And so it's when you get quiet when yourself, when you can have a better awareness.
I love that. And I think that's where you can listen with your eyes a lot better, is if you don't have that extra noise to do. I think that's great. And you're right, you just build, we put so much emphasis on verbal communication and don't realize. I work a lot with the nonverbal communication, and it makes a world of difference for the children, especially if they are nonverbal. Now you're speaking their language without actually
Exactly.
speaking, so that you connect with them so much. I love that.
Yeah.
Do you have any kind of words of encouragement or of wisdom that you could share? I'm putting you on the spot for that one, but for parents who are just either just found out about a diagnosis, or it doesn't have to be a neurodivergent child. Any child sometimes goes through these phases where you just feel like you're not speaking the same language anymore. But do you have any words of encouragement or words of wisdom that you'd like to share with them?
Yeah, I think even if you have a medically complex child, a rare genetic disorder or anything like, because that's why we ended up adopting. My husband and I carry a very rare gene, and so we had babies pass away, and so it's very hard when doctors and professionals and all these big groups of people, because I've been my whole motherhood journey. I've either been in hospitals surrounded by a group of people that were telling me something was wrong with my child, or I've been at the table, at the big table in the meeting rooms in the schools where there's a large group of people telling me that there's something wrong with my child. It's hard. It's just very hard. And you've got to know that there's a reason that you're their parent. And only you can be their parent. And you are their biggest advocate. Nobody's going to fight for your child like you will. And so, I mean, that's, and I'm not saying go back to school to get a master's degree. You don't have to do it to the extreme that I did. But know that you have power and you have authority and you know your child better than anybody else. And I think that was what I finally had to learn, was I was the one who knew what was best for him. And I needed support, obviously. I needed teachers and staff members and all that kind of thing. But I was the one that was closest to him. And so I was the one that needed to be the voice when he couldn't speak for himself.
That is beautiful and is so important, because you're right, and you're overwhelmed and you want to do so well, and you probably feel guilty about what's happening to your child as well, that you're just rolling with the punches when it comes to, everybody has their expertise, everybody is working on the condition but not on the child's per se.
Right.
So that's why you're so important. I love that. Such a beautiful, beautiful message. I could ask you so many questions, but let's talk up a little bit about your book,
Okay.
if you're okay. So, it's Eat Your Feelings. What brought it on? I know you touched a little bit on your personal story during the interview, but can you talk to us a little bit more about your book?
Yeah, thank you so much for putting my book in here. And I need to get yours. I have it. I just haven't read it yet. But I've been through a lot of trauma in my life, starting from childhood. And so that was another thing that I realized, that your childhood shapes you. And so I didn't want my son growing up thinking that he was always a bad kid. You know what I mean? Because that was, he was always in trouble. And I thought, he's going to think that he's bad, like that. He's going to grow up thinking that he was bad, because I grew up thinking that I wasn't good enough, that I had, that I didn't try hard enough, that I didn't make good enough grades, that I didn't play good on this, on the ball field, that I, everything was attached to like something that I did. I didn't feel like I was loved just for me. And so we all cope with things differently. And my coping mechanism was food. So whenever I had an emotion that I didn't want to deal with, I would eat. And so, I mean, that, first of all, it's just avoidance. And I think that's my biggest message. Like, you can't avoid your feelings forever. They are going to come up. They are going to come out. Mine manifested in physical ailments. I had migraines. I had panic attacks. I had, not just to mention the weight gain and all that kind of stuff, but anxiety, depression. I destroyed my gut health. My gut was leaky, and I had all kinds of digestion problems. And I'm not totally convinced that the tumor that I had in my leg wasn't from stress and not processing it, as well as going into menopause in my 30s. And had no idea because they thought I was too young to be in menopause. That I thought I was crazy. I thought I was losing my mind. But yeah, so I often say that it's going to deal with you if you don't deal with it. And so, but what I realized, and a lot of that had to do with my son, because of all of he had a lot of trouble eating. He still does. He eats very few foods because of texture problems and all that kind of thing. And he's very sensitive to smell. If something doesn't smell right, he literally runs out of the room. Couldn't take him to a restaurant when he was little. It was a whole thing. But I realized that as I was standing in the pantry one day, because I was having an emotion, and so I'm standing in the pantry trying to find something to put in my mouth. But I realized that the emotion that the food was tied to, there were certain types of food that I was eating for every certain emotion. So if I was anxious, I wanted something crunchy or salty because it was like that input in my mouth of that crunch. If I was sad, I wanted like a pudding or a cake type of substance. If I was angry, I wanted like a hearty chili or a big fat hamburger. And so like it was just this epiphany to me. It was like, oh my gosh, I'm literally eating my feelings. Yeah. And so I was just like, this is it's got to stop, because it was not only affecting my mental health, but my physical health. And, I was raising these children and I would realize that I was checked out for a lot of their childhood, which is one of my only regrets. I try not to have regrets about things, but that was another reason. We didn't touch on the vagus nerve again. That's like your safety net. I mean, it literally is, it puts you in kind of a primal state. So, because it doesn't feel safe. And the vagus nerve is attached to, so, I mean, it goes through like your whole body. So I think that my sort of epiphany, because it goes like around your stomach and all that kind of stuff. So, like when you get really, really nervous and you feel sick to your stomach, that's the vagus nerve. It can make you sweaty. Like it's around your diaphragm, so that's why it affects your breathing. Like you're breathing here really shallow, which is why the breathing is so helpful to calm it down. But yeah, so I just realized that I had to start dealing with my emotions instead of eating them. So.
Yeah, that's not easy. I find that's one of the hardest thing out of all. Because I'm still struggling with that. I do eat my emotions, and I'm aware of it. I'm gonna start noticing now which food I'm craving for which emotion. I never made that connection before, so I'm
Well,
gonna
and the
have a
awareness
look
is
at that.
where it starts because
That's it.
that's where you can turn it around. And I still deal with it, and I've been dealing with this a lot lately. Like I feel like I'm a fraud, because I wrote this whole book about eating my feelings, and here I am over here doing it. And not to the extent that I used to, obviously. I mean, I would eat like a whole bag of chips, if I was anxious. And now I can maybe eat four or five and just sort of get over that feeling, or maybe even something else that's healthier that can still give me that crunch. I like those little pea pod. They're I don't know what they're called, but they're like dry pea pods. I don't know, but it's like a that they're crunchy. Yeah.
They're like, yeah, I know what you mean. I've seen
I can't
those.
remember the name of them, but yeah, instead of eating like a whole bag of salt and vinegar chips, I can have
You
something
get
like
some
that, or
peas.
like freeze dried, or like freeze dried fruit, or something else like that. Like you can find other things to give you that same sensation.
Yeah, that's what I like about your approach and the work in your book as well, is because it's authentic, it's real. It's not that romanticized, oh, I beat it and everything is good and we're skipping in a field. It's real, and it's never linear when you're working through your health and to get yourself better. I can't even find my words right now. I'm so excited. There's so many things I want to say, but it's nothing is linear. It does go up and down. And so it's how do we cope with that instead of beating ourselves up for saying, oh, I'm failing again. It's no, what can I substitute? So I'm aware of it now. So what can I do? So you have a very real approach to it. I think that's what people need to see more of, is
Thank you.
that
Yeah. Well, I
we're
think we need to realize we're all just human beings.
that's it.
Like,
That's it.
we're flawed and we're not meant to be perfect. We're all still on a journey and learning. And I mean, I think that I was on another podcast recently, and his sort of thing was learning to love failure.
Okay.
And because I said to him, I said, I think if you're not failing, that means you're not trying. Like, we're gonna
Exactly.
fail. I mean,
That's it.
we're not going to do everything perfect, but you have to keep going. And then it gives other people permission to keep going. I mean, we're all here to help each other. So.
Exactly. And we need to, it's funny because I just recently did a lecture on that for leadership, and failure is part of it. So it doesn't mean that if you're a great leader, you're never going to fail. It's quite the opposite. You need failure to be become a better to become a better leader. If it's
Yeah.
failure only when you give up and you don't even try, but it's what you learn from those trying moments that
Yeah. Well,
makes you learn.
I think we all need to be in sort of a childlike state all the time, because
That's
that's
it.
how children learn. I mean, think about when you were learning to ride a bike. How many times did you fall down? A lot.
Or even just to learn to walk. I mean, we don't remember, but it wasn't just the first time and we got it. So, no, you're absolutely right. And I just play, being in that playful
Play, yeah.
mood, it just helps a lot as well with the nervous system. I think it helps. It's part of. We should all be playing, even as it's not just a child thing. I think through life, we need to be in that playful state.
Yeah, it's funny. I love Ed Milet, and that's how I got into like listening to podcasts and all that kind of stuff. And he always used to say that his dad always used to tell him to be careful, like whenever he was leaving or whatever. And he said, I realized later on that like it sort of put me in this state of being fearful. Why? Why? What am I being careful about? Like, what's going to happen when I go out into the world? You know what I mean?
Fair.
Like, it sort of puts you in this state of alert. And so I realized that I was doing the same thing to my husband, to my kids, to my in-laws, to my, you know, like, so now I say, whenever my kids leave for work, I say, have fun. Or my husband leaves for work, have fun. And
I
so
like that.
that's, I started to put my little spin on, and I'm still thinking in my, like, I pray that, for their safety and all that kind of stuff. 'Cause I mean, I'm still a mom,
You're a
and
mom.
we worry about them, but I don't want to put them in a state of like, what am I being careful about? So yeah.
Oh, I love that. I love that. I do that sometimes too, but or I'll say be good, and I realize that's just the same. Like my kids are not bad, but it's
Right.
just like, and then if you can't be good, be careful.
Right. Yeah.
I like that. Just have fun.
Have
Enjoy
fun. Yeah.
yourself. Yeah,
Yeah.
fun. Russell, oh, that's lovely. That before we wrap up, I did want to talk. You do have a framework that you wanted to, but you have this calm technique that you use. Can you touch a little bit on that, and then we could move
Yeah,
directly
so
to the.
yeah, that was developed for my son, but I use that in my adult life as well. So this is for all age groups. But CALM stands for chunk, adapt, list, and movement. So he, especially when it comes to anything school, we have to take things in little chunks at a time because he gets overwhelmed very quickly. Even simple things like cleaning his room. You know what I mean? Like, I have to tell him, okay, go put all your dirty clothes in the hamper and then come back and tell me when you're done. And then go, go. For some reason, he has 14 million water bottles in his
Oh
room.
no. Yes.
Go clean up all the water bottles and then tell me, So we just take things little bits at a time so that he doesn't get overwhelmed and then we're not all in a heightened state. And we're always adapting the environment. I mean, even me, I'm always adapting my environment. Like my little podcast setup here. I got to make sure that my chair is comfortable and that the lighting's okay and that the room's not too hot. But we would do homework laying on our stomach on the floor if we had to, because sometimes he wasn't comfortable in a chair, or put him on a little wiggle cushion. or sit in the beanbag to, you know what I mean? Like whatever you need to do to get it done, just do that. It doesn't have to be perfect sitting at the table and, you know, in the perfect light and all that kind of thing. Just adapt the environment however you need it to be. And then we make a lot of lists because he can't remember more than a couple things at a time. Like, and I think it's not that he can't remember it, like memory wise, it's just that it overwhelms him. But he loves to check a box. And so I literally used to make lists with little box, you know, little check boxes so that he could check the box. You know, we would do it for everything, you know, like if we were going on vacation and I wanted him to, you know, help pack himself, I would make him a list of all the little things. He'd be so excited. He's like, look, I finished everything, you know. And so then, and it gives them, you know, some control over the situation. I think their nervous systems feel out of control so much that they need to have a sense of control about things, even if they're simple little things. And then moving, you know, we don't sit in one place for too long. He needs to get up and move around. You know, if you need to take a walk outside, if I mean, I have to do that. Like, especially if I'm on this computer all day long, I got to get outside. I got to walk around. I got to do some jumping jacks. I guess, something to reset your nervous system. So, that's where Calm was born. And I said it was originally for him and like when my kids in the clinic and stuff like that, but I use it all the time too. So,
I can see myself using that definitely because I find mo movement more than that. I used to be able to sit for hours. That's just I was trained to do that as when as a child. I'm naturally fidgety, so I realize now as I'm getting older that my body is like, no, you need to get up and move. And if I try to fight it, I just can't focus anymore. But I like that. I
right,
like
exactly. Yeah.
and the chunking. That's something I'm definitely just the fact that you call it chunking. I love it. So much better than blocks. So I love
Yeah,
that chunk.
no, yeah,
I love
yeah,
that.
yeah.
It's great. Do you have anything new coming up and anything that you're working on for the new year?
So I'm actually stepping on the TEDx stage in March. I'm really, really excited about that. I mean, I'm nervous, of course, but I'm not as nervous as I thought I would be. I think it's just because I know that I have a message that can help people, and so I'm just excited to share it. So, but that's a pretty big thing. I'm thinking about doing my own podcast in 2026, but I got to get through this TEDx talk first. And
Yeah,
then
that's a big
maybe we
chunk.
can focus chunking.
That is
Yes.
a very big chunk. Work on that one first.
Yeah, 'cause it's going to be intense. So yeah, I got to get past the TEDx and then I can start to focus on other things. But that's another thing I've learned. Like I need to focus on some one thing. Like if I'm doing too many things, nothing happens because I just shut down. You know what I mean? I kind of have that analysis paralysis or whatever they call it. Like, so
And task
yeah.
paralysis as well. Yeah, you
Yes.
just like you have too much to do. No,
Yeah.
that's so important. And you're right. The podcast will be a Q2 thing for next year.
For sure.
That's so
Yeah.
exciting. You'll have to, yeah, we'll have to share your stage presentation. I think that would be great.
Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah.
there's so much more I'd want to talk to you about, but before we wrap up again, I do ask a question of my guest every time when we close up, and I think I told you about it. I'm not too sure,
I think you did,
but
but I already
yeah.
forgot, so we're all good.
Okay, that's good. So I'm just gonna ask you, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Oh, I love this question. I don't know if I knew that you asked that or not. 'Cause I used to say that all the time. I want to do this when I grow up. Let me think about this. Let me get my words right. I just want to leave a legacy. You know what I mean? Like I want people to have real takeaways from my work and to learn from my mistakes. And so I guess when I grow up, I just want to be I'm trying to find the right word, not influencer, because that's a
Where's that
terrible
came to mind?
word. That's a terrible word.
Yeah, it doesn't sit right. It's above that. It's more
Yeah,
than
for
that.
sure. Yeah,
Yeah.
I think
And
influence is the nice.
inspiration, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, I think I do.
Right?
I think I do want to be an inspiration to people. Just that they can change their life and they
Yeah.
can be whatever they want to be when they grow up. And you just
I
have to
love that.
start. You just have to do it.
Yeah. I love that. This is why I love asking that question, because and there's endless possibilities. You can get literal about it and say, I want to be a ballerina, or you could just, be more philosophical about it. So I love it. And it will change. I could ask you this 2, 3 years from now, and it might be different. But I
Yeah.
love that, just to keep us as adults, we're not done growing, and yes, we are still growing up. So it's nice to have that. It doesn't end at high school. There's
No,
more to
always
it.
changing, always evolving. Yes.
Exactly. So I
Never
love that. So
stop
thank you.
learning.
That's right. Never, never stop. The brain needs to keep working. I love that. So thank you for playing along. I just, it's fun. I don't ask children that question, but I will ask grown up that question.
Right.
If anybody wants to know more about the work that you do, or get their hands on your book, would you mind
Yeah.
sharing the information? And I will add it to the description.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
I
The
think
book's on.
there was also a free giveaway that you were gonna, and I'll put that
Yeah.
in as
So
well, so if you have a comment.
I have like a free PDF download that for the Calm, which has like some journaling prompts and other things in there, but it takes you sort of through the framework. And my book's on Amazon, obviously, but it's also on Barnes and Noble, anywhere you can get books. And I'm very active on Instagram and Facebook. My name is different on Facebook. That's why you were asked.
Yeah.
That's my maiden name. So Christina Borges Simmons, but I'm Christina P. Simmons everywhere else, LinkedIn, Instagram, all those places. So, yeah.
Perfect. I'll add those to the description so people can have a look in the box to see where they can get that, and to get their PDF or the framework that you have with Calm. I think that's very helpful. Again, not necessarily just for children, for adults, it works just as well. I think that's wonderful. So thank you so much for joining me, Christina. It was so great. I love every time I talk to you, I just want to talk to you some more. So I can't wait to see you. Please do share your TEDx journey so
I
that
will.
we can cheer you on. And
Yeah.
is there anything you'd like to say before we wrap up? But I'm going to
Just
put you on
thank
the
you
spot
for,
again.
yeah, no, just thank you for having me here and you keep doing the work that you're doing because it's very, very, very needed. So very proud of you as well.
Thank you so much. I thank you. Again, you'll have to come back on next year, next season, or at the end of the season, and then see how the journey's gone. I can't wait
Yeah,
to see it.
for sure.
Thank you so much. And
Thank
for
you.
everybody watching, don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening or watching from. Don't forget to go check out Christina's social medias as well. You can follow her and watch her wonderful journey that's coming up. And until next time, stay safe. Stay awesome, and we'll talk soon.